Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control all desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Should you ever set foot outside of the hotel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Hello, Buckeye fans, and welcome to another episode of the Buck Nuts Happy Hour. This is the off weekend, the open weekend, the bye weekend, whatever you want to call it for Ohio State. So we're going to do things a little different today. I'm Patrick Murphy here with Buck Nuts 247 Sports, as I said. Taking it a little easy today for the happy hour. Got a Labatt Blue that I found in my fridge. We'll sip on that slowly as we roll through here. We're going to discuss the Buckeyes and Notre Dame and kind of project forward and where Ohio State needs to improve. But first, I want to bring in Blake Brockmeyer, our 247 Sports National College Football Analyst. Blake's been on the show before. We're going to talk a little national college football landscape and kind of where things sit throughout the first 4 weeks of the season, or after the first 4 weeks of the season. Blake, thanks for joining me. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I am good. All right. We talked before the show. You were able to take in Ohio State's game against Notre Dame. I know you said that's the first time you've really been able to sit down and watch the Buckeyes. Just generally, from your kind of high perch, is not being dialed into it as much as we are here, what'd you make of the Buckeyes in that game? And maybe what'd you see from Notre Dame as well?
It was a great game, as everybody knows. I was real impressed with Ohio State's team defense. I thought you hear a lot about individuals. The defensive ends for Ohio State get a lot of national pub, but really just their team defense and the scheme and just the way that they play and their physical and just attacking the ball. They kind of had a little bit of a bend don't break effect, it seemed like, most of the game to me, but I was just impressed with just overall the talent on their defense. And just how physical and how well they attack the football when the ball's, whether it's a run or a pass.
It's interesting you say that bend but don't break approach. That was how I saw it too. And then we talked to Jim Knowles after the game. And he was like, no, we still want to be aggressive. We still want to be our defense. That's not what they showed, right? I mean, it was almost keep everything in front of you and rally to the football.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame's a good football team. I mean, they've got good players too. So you're not going to be able to do what Ohio State's done the first few weeks of the season when you're playing against Penn State and Michigan. I mean, they've still got two really tough games coming up down the stretch that'll decide kind of their fate for their season. But I was impressed with it. Obviously, every defensive coordinator wants to dominate and have a TFL and a sack on every play. But when you're playing against good teams, it's not going to happen. And Ohio State, to me, showed a lot of grit being able to win. You always, hear the don't panic. And they definitely didn't panic, and they kept their composure and were able to win the game, which was, was a great game to watch just as a college football fan.
You brought up those defensive ends as well. There's been some criticism locally because JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer, two five-star guys, they don't have any sacks this year. From what you saw in terms of the way Ohio State used them, do you feel like they're being effective still, despite maybe not getting to the quarterback? Because that's what the coaches keep saying, but there keeps being a "where are the sacks" panic among Buckeye fans.
Yeah, they're definitely not getting the pressure on. Notre Dame's got two of the best tackles in the country, so it's not going to be easy. They got rid of the ball quickly. Sawyer's more of a physical, run stuffing player from what I've seen. He can knock you back with some power and bull rush. JTT's is a little more of a finesse player. He really does a great job of kind of dissecting things when kind of there's, like a screen or something where he's unblocked. He seems to have a really good sense of kind of spatial awareness, like, okay, that was way too easy. Something's not right, and gets involved in the passing lanes. But as far as, just being able to get back and rush the passer, like the Boses or some of the great Ohio State players, it's I don't know if it's more of a scheme thing, but they definitely don't have that skill set. But they're both capable players and good players from what I've seen. What I did notice is, where's the depth? I mean, did they rotate anyone on defense the entire game? It seems like the defensive line is taxed a lot. They get, most teams are very situational, rotating defenses. You look at a lot of the SEC teams like Georgia, but Ohio State didn't notice, and maybe I missed it, but it seemed like the same guys were playing the entire game for them, which they played well, but it'd be nice to have a little bit of a rotation and keep those guys a little fresher.
No, you are spot on. Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau played all 65 defensive snaps. Tyleek Williams, defensive tackle, played 56 defensive snaps. Mike Hall and Ty Hamilton rotated 35 and 34 apiece. So you're exactly right. It's been surprising to me because we heard all offseason that there was going to be depth on this defensive line. Larry Johnson likes to rotate normally. So maybe they're just not seeing what they needed. Maybe scheme for this game. You just felt those guys were the best. I think that was something that stood out as well, because once Notre Dame started to run the ball effectively, I mean, that changed things, right?
Yeah.
And the fatigue seemed to play a part. Let's flip over to the offensive side of the ball. I want to get your take on the offensive line, given that's where you made your money playing. What did you think? I know pass protection has been pretty good for the Buckeyes. There weren't giant running holes, which you'd expect in a game like this. But what did you take away from this look at the Buckeyes offensive line in their first major test?
I thought they looked pretty good. Honestly, you read a lot about how their offensive line is going to be down this year. But from what I saw, they were physical. I know the right tackle had just a ridiculous penalty called on him for just finishing his block. But I was impressed with them. I thought they were physical. I thought they were capable in both run blocking and pass protection. And it's a group that I think is just going to continue to get better and better the more they play together. But I thought they did a great job, and I didn't notice any kind of weakness with them.
When you're an offensive lineman on the road in that type of environment, what's the biggest challenge in your experience?
Really, it's just communication. I obviously wasn't there, but when it's really loud, being able to communicate and make sure you're all on the same page. A lot of times you just have to trust the guy next to you and you through all your practice reps, you kind of have this kind of unspoken language where you just kind of like look at each other and you kind of nod and kind of say what you're going to do, even if you can't really communicate very well. But if there's any kind of audible or change or you switch your protection where you're sliding the opposite way. That's where problems can sometimes occur. Some teams will go silent count. They'll go on the head nods with the centers. And so it's really just being able to communicate, trust the guy next to you, and then pass along the line if something were to change and get that in quickly. And so, but I didn't really notice a ton of issues with them. I know they had a couple of false starts, but I thought they played pretty well as a group.
Yeah, I agree. I think there were some communication issues early in the season at Indiana and even at home in the first game of the year. But I think that's just newness and getting used to each other. Kyle McCord's been a hot topic in Columbus since the beginning of the year, the way that Ryan Day handled the quarterback situation and whatnot. Obviously, he has the drive at the end of the game that everyone's talked about. I think he's 5 of 13 on that drive, but gets them down there. What did you see from a not a young quarterback, but an inexperienced quarterback in his first major moments, that drive, but really the whole game and kind of how he managed a situation like that?
You can just tell, I mean, Ryan Day is one of the better offensive play callers in the country, and it just looks different this year, not having C.J. Stroud and some of the great Ohio State quarterbacks they've had in the years past. Just being able to throw the ball at will and be able to pick you apart. They have the players to do that, but I don't think they completely trust him to do a lot of the things that they did with C.J. Stroud, which is natural because he's only started a couple of games. So I think he'll continue to get better. Obviously, his confidence has got to be very high right now after being able to pull that win out in a pressure situation on the road, being clutch when it counted. So, I think he's got a lot of talent. I think as he continues to earn trust of the coaching staff and the team, I think they'll maybe open up the offense a little bit as the year, as the year evolves. They've, like I said, they've still got two really difficult games ahead of them. So he'll have to be clutch the rest of the season, but especially in the Penn State and Michigan games, which are going to be tough games.
Based on what you've seen, and I know it's only 4 weeks, like you said, a lot's going to change as teams get better, teams go through struggles, injuries, whatnot, but kind of where do you rank the Buckeyes if you're doing a top five, top 10, whatever, where do you kind of rank them based on what you've seen from other teams around the country?
Well, they're definitely a top 10 team. I mean, obviously they're undefeated and they won on the road against a really good, a better Notre Dame team than I think we've seen in a while, just because they have a quarterback that can deliver the football. I think it's a little early to tell exactly where they stand, but they're going to be in the hunt, and they've got to win the games that they should win. And then they obviously are going to have to beat Michigan and Penn State. Those games are going to be obviously the season for Ohio State. So as long as they stay healthy and their defense can continue to play the way they are, they're going to be in this thing until the end of the season, because they've got talent on both sides of the ball. Offensively, I love their tight end, Cade Stover. They've got two really obviously great receivers that are doing a great job that can win against anybody. So, and then Travion Henderson showed kind of some freshman flashbacks to me. I've kind of been waiting for him to kind of break back out again, because his freshman year, he was one of the best running backs in the country. So they get all that going, can get a little bit better pass rush. They've got obviously one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. So they're going to be in it until the very end, and they're going to have to win two really tough games. And one of them's at home, which is great. And they'll be favored in that game. So it's going to come down to the end of the season, like it always does.
There have been a handful already of these big, ranked versus ranked, highly ranked teams playing, LSU, Florida State early on this game. One that I'm sure you were paying close attention to, given where you went to school in Texas and Alabama. Where do you kind of rank those in terms of wins based on what you know, Ohio State was able to do? Who has maybe the best win in the country right now in your mind?
That's a tough question. I would say, obviously, Texas beating Alabama at night on the road was a big win for them. I've been real impressed with Florida State this year. They really kind of schooled LSU the first week of the season. Really outcoached LSU, especially in the second half. And they've got a lot of talent as well. So I would say those two teams have looked good early. Texas hasn't been quite as consistent week to week, which makes me a little bit nervous for them down the road, because they still have a few tough games, including surprisingly Kansas this weekend. Who would have thought you would say that in the same sentence? So, there's a lot of football to be played. There's a lot of things that are going to happen. The West Coast has got some teams this year that look pretty good to me. Washington, I think, is going to be in this thing until the end of the season. So it's too early to tell, but there's probably 10 teams right now that are capable, including LSU, who has a loss, if they can win out, because they've still got a lot of tough games to play. So there's going to be, like every year, lots of surprises, lots of things happen, injuries. But I think Ohio State is going to be in this until the last week of the season. And obviously they've got to beat Michigan.
When you look at a team like Texas that obviously has the tradition, there's so much demand down there in Austin, but it hasn't happened in a while. Now you've got this win at Alabama. You mentioned it hasn't been as consistent. How do you build on something like that when it hasn't been a regular thing in Austin in recent years?
Well, their roster is a lot different than it's been the last, they've been pretty bad for the last 15 years. But through the transfer portal and through NIL, they've really upgraded their roster. Their offense has got probably four first-round picks on it, and one that will be a high pick next year that's not eligible, in Kelvin Banks. So, and their defense is playing great right now. So their two defensive tackles are playing at a high level, and they've got good players on every, at their linebacker position and in the back end. So talent wise, they shouldn't lose a game. So it's just a matter of, every week is a different week and it's a different challenge, and you just have to keep your, keep your blinders on and be ready to play every week, because the big schools with the big logos like Ohio State and Texas and Alabama, you're everyone's Super Bowl every week, and everyone's going to try to play their best game. You're going to get the best plays and coaches and trick plays, and they're going to empty out the playbook on you because it's a big win for that school.
You mentioned the West Coast teams. I don't know how many people who are watching or will listen to this stay up to watch some of those games. Obviously, Colorado's been a story because of Deion and how they started. You mentioned Washington, who I agree with you, I think looked really good with Michael Penix. USC, obviously, in the mix. It's kind of unfortunate that this is the last year of the Pac-12 as we know it, and they finally have teams contending out there. But What do you make of that group? And is Washington that team you could see coming out of it? Or can USC get in that mix? What's kind of your read of the West Coast teams?
I like Washington right now. I think they're the most complete team I've seen. They've got three really good receivers. Michael Penix could easily be the leading contender for the Heisman right now. He's been on fire the last two seasons. And just, they seem really unstoppable offensively currently. And their defense has got some good players on it as well. They've got an edge rusher in Braylon Trice who hasn't been super productive as of yet. But watching his film from last year, he's one of the best natural, twitchy edge guys in the country, in my opinion. USC is I don't trust USC. I don't know what it is about them. Caleb Williams is a complete difference maker, obviously, and just a phenom when it comes to being a quarterback. And they've got some really explosive wide receivers that can score at a moment's notice. Defensively, I still have a lot of questions with their defense. Their special teams last week looked a little suspect against a not very good Arizona State team. So, we're not going to find out much about them against Colorado this weekend, but I like Washington. Utah continues to win, every week. It seems like that they're everyone's thorn in the side in the Pac-12, and Washington State looks good this year as well. So there's some good teams out west. Do they stack up against the top teams in the country, besides the West Coast teams? I think Washington does, and with Caleb Williams, I think you're never out of it because he's just such a difference maker.
Let's go down to the SEC. I think Georgia's had obviously number one in the rankings, but kind of a quiet start to the season, like Ohio State breaking in some new pieces and quarterback being one of them. Alabama, the loss to Texas, things haven't looked as good as they've been under Saban traditionally. How do you see kind of the SEC shaking out? Is Georgia that same team they've been the past 2 years? Can Bama get things back on the road? What's your view of down south?
Well, SEC is tough to figure out. I still think LSU is the most talented team in the SEC. I think Jaden Daniels playing at a high level right now. They have to go to Tuscaloosa to play them, which I'm assuming will probably be a night game. That will be a difficult game, obviously. But Georgia doesn't seem quite the same team that they've been, obviously. I think Carson Beck has played well at quarterback for them. They've had a lot of injuries. And their schedule, I mean, it's a joke who the SEC East teams play. So you're not going to really know until the SEC championship game. And so it'll be either Alabama or LSU, and that will be a really good game. I mean, whoever comes out of that, Alabama looked way better last week defensively, especially. Defense looked really good last week, and so I would imagine they'll have no problem with Mississippi State this week, and they play A&M the next week in College Station, which is been a really tough game for them the last few times they've gone down there. So the SEC West to me is going to be a interesting weekly tough games for a lot of teams just because they've been so up and down. But I do like LSU, and I think that they'll come out of the West.
We saw last week in the ACC, Florida State go to Clemson, get a win. I don't know if it was as convincing as some people thought it might be, but you go to Death Valley, you come out with a win. I think you feel okay about that. Duke obviously had the big win to start the season. They play Notre Dame this week. What's your read on the ACC and then how this may play out? And what do you think has happened with Clemson? Why has it fallen off as quickly as it has under Dabo?
Well, I think, everybody wanted to blame, including probably a little bit myself, of DJU, but turns out that I think Cade Klubnik's a much better quarterback, but they're still getting the same results. I think just the not using the transfer portal to get kids that they could easily get. Right. Dabo keeps saying that he doesn't think that they upgrade his roster, but there's a lot of talented kids that would love to play at Clemson, and just for some reason they haven't use that to like a lot of the top schools have, to just cherry pick certain guys to come in and help. At the very least with depth, their wide receiver group has taken a dramatic drop off over the years from what they've been. But they're still a good team. Defensively, it's like they played good enough to win last week. And then just, the turnover that they had where they had the fumble for the touchdown, that was just a killer. But Kalen DeLoach is a guy that I've written about before. That guy is an incredible athlete that can run with any athlete in the country. So Florida State's got some good players. Duke, does anybody really trust Duke to come out of the ACC? I don't know. I don't know if I do or not, but that was an impressive first game that they had against Clemson, where they really kind of took it to them. And they've got good players. Their left tackle's a good player. They've got a couple of defensive linemen that are going to play in the league. So they've upgraded the talent on their team. I like their quarterback as well. He hasn't thrown the ball as well as I was expecting, but he's ran the ball, made plays with his feet, just kind of a winner, an overall kind of a winner type quarterback that gets things done. And that'll be an interesting game with College Game Day going to Duke of all places this weekend, and Notre Dame coming off a tough loss. It'll be that'll be a game that I'll have my eyes on for sure.
Yeah, I think Duke for so long has just been this purely basketball school, right? And then you finally get a good coach in there that knows what he's doing. You get a couple of these wins. They had a good season last year, given kind of where they were. You're certainly right. I'll be very tuned into that one.
And North Carolina's been surprisingly well. Like they've kind of surprised me on how well they've played this year. I wasn't sure going into the season how good their defense was going to be. I knew they had a couple of good players, but they've been impressive early on. So far this season, have looked well. They've obviously got an incredible quarterback in Drake May. So that's a team to keep an eye on. I would imagine that they will be playing Florida State at the end of the season, but we'll see.
Let's bring it back to the Big Ten to get you out of here. You've already mentioned Ohio State has Penn State and Michigan. In your mind, are those the three real contenders? Is there anyone from the West that you could see doing anything?
Nope, that's it. Yeah. You got three teams, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan. It's going to come down to those three teams. I believe Michigan goes to Penn State.
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see if everyone kind of knocks everybody off, what happens then. But it's a shame that they can't just let the two best teams in the Big Ten play each other at the end of the season, because playing the teams in the West is going to be a complete joke, as it always is. But those are the three teams that I expected going into the season that were going to be good. And so far they've delivered. Michigan hadn't played anybody, so it's hard to really get a great feel for them so far. Penn State's looked pretty good so far, especially their defense, which I knew was going to be pretty nasty. So it'll be the Ohio State Penn State game is going to be a must see TV.
And real quick on Penn State, I think fans, obviously knew, Ohio State fans know what Michigan has. Penn State gave the Buckeyes a hell of a game last year in State College. You mentioned a little bit about them, but Drew Aller at quarterback, those running backs that they've got, what's really stood out the most about what they've done so far?
Well, Nick Singleton hadn't done a whole lot, which has been surprising. I kind of went into the season thinking he was going to be one of the top backs in the country, and he's actually has a teammate that's the leading rusher on the team right now. I've been impressed with their defense. Chop Robinson is one of the best, if not the best, pass rusher in the country right now. Really twitchy, plays on the edge most of the time. Will line up sometimes inside on obvious passing situations. But they've got a lot of good players on their defense. They bring a lot of havoc, create a lot of chaos. And last year's Ohio State Penn State game, JTT's coming out party. What an incredible game he had, and really just almost won the game by himself. So hopefully he'll get going again for Ohio State, and the sacks will hopefully start to pile up for him.
All right, Blake, thank you very much. I know it's a busy time of year, so I appreciate you taking the time to come on and give some perspective on kind of where things stand in your mind on the national landscape. We've got no game this weekend to talk about, so we need to fill the time somehow. You did great. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thanks. We'll talk to you soon. All right, thanks again to Blake. We have a number of guys who do great work on the national scene at 24/7 Sports. Blake, Brad Crawford, who's been on the show, Chris Hummer as well, all those guys. So if you're looking for more big picture stuff from the college football landscape, we do it on the college basketball side too, but we're not there. Make sure you're tuned in to 24/7 Sports. I've got a message from our friends at Jonathan Green. Hey there, Bucknuts listeners. It's fall, which means two things. It's football season and it's lawn care season. Fall is the best time to oversee your lawn. So if you haven't already, now is the perfect time. We recommend Jonathan Green Black Beauty Grass Seed because it's naturally dark green in color, has roots that can grow up to 4 feet deep, and it's super drought tolerant. With over 130 years of experience, Jonathan Green is a name you can trust for superior lawn care products. They only sell the highest quality grass seed on the market. And here's the best part. Buckeye fans, they're offering you 10% off your order on jonathangreen.com. So head over there now and use the code BUCKNUTS10. That's BUCKNUTS, one word, the numbers 10 for 10 at checkout. Plus, Jonathan Green doesn't only sell grass seed. They carry everything you need to create the perfect outdoor oasis, from lawn fertilizers and weed controls to soil amendments and spreaders. They've got you covered. So don't wait any longer. Make your neighbors green with envy and turn your lawn into a showstopper with Jonathan Green lawn care products. Visit jonathangreen.com and use coupon code BUCKNUTS to get 10% off your order of grass seed, lawn fertilizer, weed controls, and more. Jonathan Green, quality lawn service since 1881. Good stuff, guys. Recommend them. They're a good partner to the show. So if you're looking for that, I highly recommend joining up with the Jonathan Green people. All right, let's dive in to the Buckeyes. And if you have, I saw some questions were being thrown in the chat there. We had a couple. If you have more about the Notre Dame game, about things going forward, what you saw, what you think I saw, all that, feel free, if you're watching this live, to throw those in the chat. We'll try and answer some questions here at the end. But I want to dive into a few different topics, kind of coming out of the first 4 weeks, the Notre Dame game in particular, but really what we've seen from the Buckeyes here throughout this opening third of the season. It's crazy to think we're that far in already. If you look offensively, the numbers are not what they've been. And I think people have questioned why that is, right? And the most obvious reason is, okay, new offensive line, new quarterback. And I think there's very much something to that. Ryan Day hasn't put full trust, and maybe not full trust, but he hasn't let Kyle McCord kind of take over the offense the way that a CJ Stroud was doing, you know, in his second season, or even as his first season went along. You know, I think if you do think back with CJ Stroud, he did throw for 400 yards in his second game as a starter. So I think people feel like his progression happened quicker than maybe it did just because of the situation. Ryan Day talked about how he didn't want to put as much on a guy like Kyle McCord's plate as he did CJ Stroud so quickly. And you saw kind of that result in the Oregon game. But I think there's more to it with this offense. I think the quarterback and the offensive line certainly play a part. I've been very, I don't want to say disappointed because that's not the right word, but I thought we'd see more from this run game early in the season, especially as Kyle McCord got settled. I figured, okay, you've got two interior offensive linemen that are returning starters, both talented, and Donovan Jackson and Matthew Jones. Why not load up on the run a bit more and make that, you know, play good defense, which I'll get to. But load up on the run and, you know, have that kind of be the staple of your offense. And obviously in a Ryan Day offense, you're never going to go completely away from the passing attack. He's a quarterback, a quarterback's coach. That's what he does. But I think that the fact that they haven't use the run game more with the talented and number of running backs is interesting. And also how they've used the run game. Look, I've been a big, big proponent of Travion Henderson. You know, going to last year, I said easily the most talented running back on the team. You know, why would you not give him the ball as much as possible? Obviously, he gets injured, but we even saw before then he was splitting reps with Mayan Williams, who proved to be pretty talented as well. This year, kind of the same thought going into the season, though I did expect them to split up the reps a bit more. But the way that they've used these running backs through these first 4 weeks has sort of changed my tune on how I feel like Ohio State could best use these backs and use them more. You know, Ryan Day talks, he mentioned it. We're recording this on Thursday. He mentioned it again on the radio show that he does just about, you know, we need to get Travion Henderson some more touches. He said it about Chip Traynham too. Well, you call more run plays, you get more touches for the running backs, right? And if you look at Kyle McCord's stats through the first few games, first four games here, he has thrown the ball. Let's see what it is. The fewest he's thrown it was against Youngstown State, where he threw it 20 times, but he's thrown for 33 attempts against Indiana and then 37 against Notre Dame. Now, a good chunk of those 37 came on that final drive, and obviously he had to throw the ball. So that number looks a little bit different if that game doesn't play out. But for me, there's some really great things that Travion Henderson does, and you can't completely – you're not going to take him off the field completely because he is as talented, and you saw that on the 61-yard run. At any point, as Ryan Day puts it, he can be a home run hitter. But Ryan Day's also said he wants – to average 4 yards per carry. Anytime the running back touches the ball, that should be the goal, is to get 4 yards per carry. Well, that's not what Travion Henderson is. He's a guy who wants to be in space and wants to make the big play, and he can do that, but he's not going to do it every play. And right now, Ohio State is treating him as this do-everything running back that he just isn't. You know, you're 3 years in to Travion Henderson's career at Ohio State, and I know last year was disappointing because of the injuries, but we've not seen him be a guy that runs between the tackles and picks up 2, 3, 4 yards regularly. Often he gets stopped at the line. Maybe it's, you know, if it's not blocked perfectly, he doesn't seem to have it. Now he can bounce it outside. And we saw that, you know, that wasn't necessarily what the play was designed to do on Saturday against Notre Dame. To me, you found the perfect guy to do that dirty work stuff in Chip Traynham. And you've obviously seen him do some of that this season. You've seen him go in and play fullback. You've seen him be in some short yardage situations. Obviously, he came in for that last play against Notre Dame and got the game-winning touchdown. He came in earlier on that drive when I'd have to go back and look. I remember watching from the end zone, because that's where we were at the game. They pulled Travion Henderson out, and he was not thrilled about it. You know, he spoke with Tony Alford quickly on the sideline. Obviously, he wants to be in the game on that drive, right? They tried to get him the ball in space on the first two plays. He and Kyle McCord could not connect. But to me, it seems like you trust Chip Traynham a little bit more as a pass blocker when you need a throw. You trust him a little bit more to do kind of the tough, you know, Ryan Day talks tough, right? You trust him there. I feel like it should, the reps should be split for them between, you know, more evenly, I feel like. And, you know, obviously they have this connection with Travion Henderson. He was the number one running back in the country. He was a huge get for Ohio State at the time. And I do think he needs to be involved and be able to make some of these huge plays because it is a difference maker. You saw it against Notre Dame, but I also think your offense can run more efficiently. You stay ahead of the sticks a bit more if Chip Traynham is in there. And what's happened with Mayan Williams, I think, is quite the mystery. I mean, obviously Chip has surpassed him. He did it before the season even began, but it looked like earlier you were going to have this three-headed monster. And I know it's, you know, you would say it's hard to get all these guys, the snaps. Notre Dame gave five running backs carries on Saturday, and they did it quickly. I mean, by the end of the game, Estime had 14, Love had 8, Price had 3, Payne had 6, Ford had 2. That, you know, that's a nice way to split it up. You know, the top three, 14, 8, and 3. I think if you're Mayan Williams, you know, Payne had 6. I think if you're Mayan Williams, you'd like to be a bit more involved than you certainly would like to be more involved than you are now. You definitely like to be closer to some of those, you know, closer to what you were last year. And I see a couple comments about, you know, here from Brass Tax. Chip is quicker than Mayan. Certainly agree. I think that there's certainly a reason he's kind of taken that. But, you know, you're still using Mayan down by the end zone, right? In these short yardage situations, they've worked a couple times. I just think there's better ways to divide this up. And, you know, Travion Henderson, as much as kind of has gone into developing him and making him the running back that he is, you just have to kind of accept that he's going to be this guy who hits on some big plays, but running him up the middle multiple times is part of the reason. Now, it's not all of it. The blocking can be better. I think the play calling can certainly be better on some of these calls. You know, the boundary runs have not worked as well as they hoped, but they just, you know, you need to get your guys out there for the right situations. That's what Notre Dame was doing. You saw it wear down Ohio State's defense, and they had success. I think that, for me, all of a sudden, you go from, you know, an offense that's still trying to throw the ball a good amount to a more balanced offense. You know, Ohio State right now is 75th in the country with 149 rushing yards per game. They've attempted 118 rushes, which is 116th in the country. I honestly thought it would just be a more balanced attack this year. It hasn't been. And I think that's disappointing. I do think the offensive line is getting better, but I still think it's a struggle to run block, which is confusing to me, given what you have on the interior. I like some of the pulling that they did. There was some success there. There's not just in the Notre Dame game, but in some other plays they've run throughout the season. But this is something I think has to be a focus this week, as you don't have a game on Saturday, is how you get this running game going. And for me, you know, make it more even between Travion Henderson and Chip Tranum. I just think it's clear that these guys have certain skills that you can enhance your entire offense by using them. And they're just not doing it, at least in my eyes. I know that there was a lot of talk about Marvin Harrison after the game, so I wanted to give an update about that while we were on the offense. In case you missed it, Ryan Day said after the game, sprained ankle. I was on the Bucknuts Morning 5 on Wednesday, and people were asking, you know, it was a high ankle sprain, low ankle sprain. I don't know if that's the correct terminology, but high ankle sprains tend to be worse. We were at interviews Wednesday afternoon, and while we did not talk to Marvin Harrison, he along with, I believe it was Xavier Johnson and and Reese Stockdale were on the Monarch machine catching passes. Now, they weren't doing routes. It was a lot of stationary stuff, but Marvin's right ankle was taped. It didn't look to be seriously taped, just had some tape on it underneath his sock and shoe. Seemed to be walking, you know, without a noticeable limp. So that was certainly positive to see him out there doing that stuff. The guy just doesn't take a break. And you know, credit to him, seriously, for going back out there and playing. You know, who knows what kind of pain he was in for that game. I do think the ankle affected him a little bit. I think that deep shot that Kyle McCord took to him in the third quarter probably gets more separation and probably hauls that in for a touchdown if he's playing on a healthy ankle. But played on an injured ankle last year, as he revealed to us a week or so ago. So he's dealt with this before. Obviously, you'd want him to be as healthy as possible, but good time for the off week for sure for him to get healthy. And obviously, he's not the only one dealing with bruises and whatnot, you know, but the most noticeable and probably the biggest name so far. So I think that's a positive update on Marvin. Flipping over the defensive side of the ball, I have been so impressed with what this defense has been able to do as a whole this year. Now there's still some questions, still some areas where you need to improve, But I really liked, and I wrote about this and I talked about it a lot throughout the offseason, so I like that this kind of came through in this Notre Dame game, is Jim Knowles being willing to adjust to what he has at Ohio State instead of being the defensive coordinator he's been in the past. He came here with a lot of success in the, you know, with Oklahoma State and with Duke prior to that, and what he'd done. And he tried to make a lot of that work throughout the first season. And it certainly improved Ohio State, but he talked all offseason about, you know, adjusting and learning from that first year. This was the first real time to show that. And I think you saw it with what he did. This was not the defense you saw against Michigan. It was not the defense you saw against Georgia in the college football playoff. It was when I wrote about this, I used the examples of teams in the NFL have done this now these last few years against high powered offenses. The best example is, you know, against the Kansas City Chiefs back when they still had Tyreek Hill. You know, it was a lot of big plays and taking shots to him. Well, defenses just played deeper, you know, put a kind of a cap on the defense, so to speak, a ceiling on the defense, so guys weren't be able to get by them, and took away those big plays. And if you remember a couple of years ago, the Kansas City Chiefs, you're an NFL team, got kind of frustrated. And I think there were some turnovers, trying to take shots that weren't there, things like that. Now Ohio State's doing it a different way. That, you know, Notre Dame wasn't necessarily a big play offense, but they had the potential to hit big plays. We talked a lot going into the game about the play action pass, if they could get the run game going and whatnot. What they're forcing them to do, what they forced Notre Dame to do, was take these long, drawn-out drives. You know, you're going to – if you want to score on us, if you want to get down to the red zone, it's not going to be two, three, four plays. You're going to have to earn it. And Notre Dame had the first drive of the game, the first offensive drive of the game, 14 plays, went 71 yards, 8-12 off the clock, turned the ball over on downs. Cody Simon makes the play. The two touchdown drives that Notre Dame did score, 13 and 11 plays each, went 75 and 96 yards, 6.5 minutes, 7.5 minutes each time. You know, that's what Ohio State in these games, I think, want the opponent to do, is you're going to have to earn it all the way down the field. And if you want to take a shot, fine, we're going to cap it. If you want to, if you're not patient, you know, you may turn the ball over. You may, you may do something stupid that you know, sets you even further behind the sticks. This is an interesting change by Jim Knowles, who has been aggressive throughout his career because he's been playing from a talent deficit at almost every place he's been. And he's had to take risks. And, you know, when you take risks, either they pay off or they don't. And you've seen at Ohio State, when they don't, it's a significantly bigger mistake than it ever is at Oklahoma State, just because of what level you're playing on, right? You're playing against Michigan with the chance to go to the Big Ten championship game. You're playing against Georgia with the chance to go to the national championship game. If you use that defense in either of those games, I don't know if you win the game. You probably win the Georgia game, given how close it was. And you probably don't allow some of those big plays, though there are still execution things in there. I think this is an interesting change by Jim Knowles. I want to see how he continues to use this defense as the year moves along. I believe that you will see him be more aggressive in games, you know, Purdue, for example, or things like that. You know, you'll still see some of those blitzes. We've seen it already some this year. But they've done some different things even on the blitzing side of things. The biggest example against Notre Dame was they brought Tommy Eichenberg and Steel Chambers on a blitz. I think it was in the second quarter. And Tyleek Williams and I think Mike Hall dropped to where the linebackers normally are. So you aren't necessarily bringing more numbers, but you're simulating that pressure, as they call it, by, you know, okay, the offensive line thinks they're blocking a tackle. Okay, now the linebacker's coming. So it's a different way to try and get pressure. You know, obviously the pressure that in terms of sacks and tackles for a loss hasn't been there. I wrote about this the other day, though. If you look at kind of the underlying numbers for Ohio State, there have been some actually good statistical, some good statistical data in terms of what they are able to do pressure wise. And I think that's why the staff doesn't seem to care that much that there aren't a ton of sacks. They have 5 sacks this season, which is number 114th in the country. According to Pro Football Focus, which I know not everyone buys into, but take it for what it is, Ohio State's getting pressure at the 8th highest rate among all FBS teams. Now, you know, obviously that hasn't led to sacks, but they are getting there. They are getting pressure on the quarterback. PFF also has JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer as 2 of the top 25 players in the country when it comes to pass rushing on plays, winning against their blockers 18% of the time, which is in the top 25 for all players who have rushed the passer 80 times or more. So, like, looking at those numbers, things don't look as bad. I certainly think if you're going to play a defense that wants to keep things in front of you in the big games, you have to get the pressure with the front four. You don't want to bring extra pressure because that leaves holes in the defense. Now, any defense is not going to be perfect, right? There's going to be spaces to get passes, to hit on runs. Sam Hartman, I thought in the first half, did a really good job of finding those kind of creases, especially in zone defense, which is what Ohio State played a lot because they wanted to keep their eye on the football and kind of rally to the ball. Sam Hartman did a great job of picking those out. Not every quarterback is going to be able to do that, but the good ones are. I think, you know, Ohio State will be able to play more man defense as they go along when they're not playing a quarterback like Sam Hartman. I think there is a concern with the way Notre Dame was able to run the ball in the second half. And I even talked about this going in to this game because Western Kentucky was able to get some push, and not that they were able to do much with it, but they were able to move that line of scrimmage a little bit. And Ohio State definitely, as Blake Brockermeyer joined us earlier, was talking about, you know, those defensive linemen started to wear down, and you could see that as Notre Dame really started to hit on some of those run plays in the second half. You know, you had guys going for, you know, guys that maybe were going for 3-4 yards in the first half. You know, Jeremiah Love on the second possession of the second half. Yeah. 16 yards. Jaden Price rushed for 18 yards. You're moving the ball there. Sam Hartman's pass for 6, gain of 6 on the run. So, you know, you just, those numbers do add up, and, you know, that's fine if you're Ohio State and you are willing to let them, you know, slowly move down the field. Now you got to get stops. And that's been their biggest thing. They were able to force 2 turnovers on downs. You know, you look at the 3rd and short plays for Ohio State. It was pulling up the numbers here. Notre Dame was 3 for 5 on 3rd and short. You don't love that, do you? Overall on 3rd down, I think they were 5 of 10. Yeah, so, but, you know, when they were able to get 3rd and 4th or shorter, they were generally able to get it. Ohio State's defense still needs to be able to get off the field. And, you know, that's going to give the offense more plays, which is something Ryan Day continues to talk about. The last thing from the game that I wanted to bring up is this, and I know people are starting to get sick of it, so I won't harp on it too long, but I wrote about this yesterday. This Lou Holtz Ryan Day feud, which I think is hysterical, but I do think it we're pushing on the edge of using this as content here. I think that it's possible that both guys are correct. I think what Lou Holtz is saying is what a lot of Buckeye fans have said for the last 2 seasons, that, you know, Ohio State isn't this rugged, giant offensive line team that's just going to run the ball at you and 3 yards in a cloud of dust and all that. I mean, they haven't been that under Ryan Day. It just is what it is. They have talented quarterbacks, talented receivers. They want to throw the ball around. I wouldn't say they're a complete finesse team, but they're certainly more of a finesse team than they've been in the past. And I think that's what Lou Holtz is saying, was saying. What I think Ryan Day is saying is that he believes this team, this year's team, is mentally tough, and, you know, they can fight through a game like that, have to go 65 yards in a minute 26. They don't blink. They get down to the 1-yard line. There's 3 seconds left. They can get that tough yard there, but it's more about the approach that they can go on the road and win a top 10 game like that at a tough place to play, like Notre Dame Stadium, you know, you don't have to be physically tough to necessarily do that. You have to be able to handle the pressure. And when things go bad, you have to be able to manage those situations. And I think that's what Ohio State did. If you go back and look at the fourth down or the touchdown from Chip Traynham, obviously Notre Dame didn't have 10 players on the field. Let's not talk about that. But the reason that play works, even if Notre Dame does have the right amount of players on the field, is you have two of the best wide receivers in the country lined up to the right of the formation. And Notre Dame has to be aware of that fact. Everyone knows you're going to run there, but on the off chance that you do something, you can't just not pay attention to those guys. So that takes guys out of the box. Earlier, they tried to run up the middle on fourth down or third down. Maybe it was, there was a play on the goal line when they brought in Caden Curry and they brought in, I think, three tight ends and Luke Montgomery was in the game. And, you know, they tried to line up like Wisconsin. That's not Ohio State football these days. Yeah, I mean, it'd be great if you could do that. And they did that some last year with Mitch Rossi playing fullback, and it looks different, and so it's exciting. The best thing that Ohio State has going for it is the talented weapons that you have to cover for. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Buka. The fact that you have a quarterback that you have to respect, even if he's not C.J. Stroud right now, that he could throw it out there to Marvin Harrison Jr. and he could make that play that wins the game. Yeah, you still want to be able to run and get the tough yards, and I get all that, and they need to be better on short yardage. But you don't have to line up in these heavy sets and try and prove to Lou Holtz or anyone else that has said you guys aren't you are a finesse team or you're not tough enough that you are that. Just be who you are. Use the, you know, spread. You don't have to go full spread on a play like that, but I liked that play call at the end because you can still be tough that way. Use what you have at your disposal and don't try and be something you're not is my thought. And I think that the fact that, you know, Ohio State has tried to load up front and, you know, do these play action passes off that, you bet if you're trying to throw the ball to Cade Stover or Chip Traynham or Joe Royer, you have three guys on the bench now that are better pass catchers. You know, if you're going to throw the ball on third and short or fourth and short, get the best pass catchers on the field. You can still line those guys up tight if you want. A lot of teams do it. Anyway, I said I wasn't going to talk about that much, but I did. Couple quick things before we get out of here. I know we had a couple questions here. Mike Schaefer, Patrick, what impact has Joe Philbin had on the OSU offense? That's a good question. I think in talking to some of the guys, I think he certainly helped with kind of big picture offensive line stuff. You know, some of the offensive linemen have talked about what he's kind of talked to them about and in terms of different techniques and things like that. I think he's definitely, like all of the analysts, I think he's definitely a good eye to have on this because he has been there, done that, not only at the college level, but at a high level. So I think that he has certainly made an impact. Now, you know, we'd have to be at practice every day, wish we were, to kind of see directly what impact he's made. But I think we'll know more as we go through the season and you see how this offensive line specifically, because that's really his focus, his offensive line specifically evolves. I think he will certainly, along with Justin Fry, Mike Scalene, have an impact on that. Mellow number 7 said earlier, James Laurinaitis has to get CJ Hicks prepared to get playing time. I agree with you. I would ask how you get him playing time. Are you taking Cade Stover Tommy Eichenberg and Steel Chambers off the field? Jim Knowles said he wanted to rotate those guys more. That hasn't really been the case. I think Cody Simons right now, your third linebacker, as we saw against Notre Dame. Remember, CJ Hicks didn't play linebacker in high school. He wasn't doing what he was being asked to do at Ohio State. So even though he's a five-star prospect, not entirely surprised that it's taken him a couple years to, kind of get things figured out. He was excited. He was right in front of me after Ohio State won, as excited as anybody. You can see this video I posted on Twitter about that win. So I'm not worried about CJ Hicks. I think they will get him in. And Kerry Brooks asks, how do you think we match up against Oregon? I have only seen a little bit of Oregon play, so tough to answer that question. A lot of the games I've still been working or have been working all day and didn't stay up to watch Oregon play. So I need to watch some more. We were talking earlier about the Pac-12. I saw you. I've seen USC a couple times just because I've had them on when I've gotten home. I need to see more of the West Coast teams. Blake was talking about Washington, who certainly on paper looked really good. I just haven't seen them play other than highlights. But look, as I said before the season, Ohio State has as much talent as anyone in the country. And, you know, they have a top 10 win to kind of back that up. You build on this the right way. I said this after the game on the What We Learned Live podcast. You build on this the right way. This could be a jumping off point for the team, for a lot of players, for the coaches. I think there's a lot that you can take from here. Now, if you don't handle this the right way, if people start to think that they've made it, you could have some trouble down the road. I think it's good that Ohio State faces a team like Maryland coming out of this bye, open, off weekend, whatever you want to call it, because that's not a team that you can just take lightly. And, you know, you just need to look back as far as last year when Maryland had them a little bit on the ropes. Now, obviously that was on the road, not at home, but you've got a talented offensive team, a team that I believe is still undefeated. So certainly can't take them lightly coming out of the bye, which I think is important. Good question here. JVM1341 asking what I'm drinking today. Today's just a Miller Lite, a Labatt Blue. Miller Lite was the other option, and I picked Labatt Blue from the fridge. My plan is to go on a jog later. It looks, while it's raining outside, the temperature's great, so not trying to get too crazy. All right, final thing. We started this year. What you'll be reading, obviously no Ohio State game this weekend. So the headline, I think, is pretty simple. Buckeyes enjoy off weekend, prepare for Maryland test, Big Ten play, something along those lines. Look, the Buckeyes continue to put work in this weekend. They were practicing this week. The weekend is a time for these players to go home, see their families, you know, whatever you want to do with your off weekend. You know, Cody Simon was talking about getting back home, watching his brother who plays for, I don't remember off the top of my head, did play at Notre Dame, but he wants to watch his brother play. I assume a lot of guys are going to be doing that. It will be good for them to just relax, get players healthy, and then get back to work on Monday, Tuesday, Sunday, whenever they have their next practice. So that's what I think would be the headline if you're going to do a headline coming out of this off week. Thanks again, Buckeye fans. I appreciate you all tuning in for this, whether you watch live. Thanks again, or listen after the fact. Thanks again to Blake Brockermeyer, 24/7 Sports' national football analyst. I thought he gave us some good stuff, not only about the Buckeyes, but about what's going on around college football. We'll do that every so often when we get the chance to bring in one of the national guys to just give that big picture view on everything. Once again, I'm Patrick Murphy from Bucknuts and 24/7 Sports. This has been the Bucknuts Happy Hour. Cheers, everybody. Enjoy your BOF weekend.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.